So sometimes what happens is you want to break a mountain, right? It can't be done in one day. You attempt it for, 10 times, it might not break. But if you attempt it 100 times, it might break, right? So persistence is the most important thing for an entrepreneur. So if you have small successes, celebrate them, move ahead, be happy. If you have failures, don't give up, right? You'll have failures, you'll have demotivations, you'll feel bad, things are not working out. Just remember, you need to have some mentors in this industry.
Hello everyone, Ashok here. Thank you for tuning into this third episode of Indian Startup Stories. Today, our guest is Rohit Dangayach, CEO, co-founder of Wholesale Box, a B2B retail platform which enables local unbranded offline businesses and the brand products to reach more customers in Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities in India. In this episode, Rohit talks about his background, how it all started, their initial days challenges, the mindset of owning a business as an intrapreneur and transition to an entrepreneur, changes in customer habits in this era of digital data, their first aha moment and experiences in bringing big investors, opportunities for young entrepreneurs in offline businesses to focus, and much more. So let's jump in. Hi, Rohit. Thank you for coming on to Indian Startup Stories today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Can you talk about your background and what you do in Wholesale Box?
Sure, Ashok. So in terms of background, so I hail from Jaipur, did my schooling from St. Xavier's in Jaipur, then went to IIT Roorkee, and then after a couple of years of work, went to IIM Bangalore. Post IIM Bangalore has been a very, very interesting journey. So I joined a US-based management consulting firm called Diamond. Worked there for about 1.5 years. I realized consulting was not my interest area. I mean, I found myself to be very, very execution-oriented. And that's where I sort of, got lucky. 2010, my company got acquired by PwC in US. So we had to relocate to US. And that was the time I decided to actually move back to my hometown, Jaipur. So there was a lot of love, affection towards Jaipur. Plus, the entire family was here. My father was not well. Multiple reasons. We thought Jaipur might be, Jaipur is a place we should definitely try. And came to Jaipur, joined Girnar Software and Kardeko. So Girnar Software is the parent company of Kardeko.
Okay.
Kardeko.com was in a very, very nascent stage at that time. It was hardly 5-6 people, mostly telecallers, trying to do something around leads. That was the time I joined. This was 2010.
Okay.
So, from my expertise has been on building up a business. And interestingly, at Kardeko, I got exposed to what a tech product is, what internet is, what is the power of a tech product, what actually you can drive through it, and how to build an entire business out of it. So I built the used car dealer business, the new car dealer business, OEM business, car finance, car insurance, practically the entire company, where we scaled up to about 250 people when Sequoia came in. So till that time, I was like building the entire business and running the show. Gave you a good exposure of how products have to be structured, what to do with leads, classified selling, lot of other things. So I think that was the best experience that I could have ever got in my life. Good support from the founders in terms of, of course, there were a lot of things going on within Girnar Software. So got good support in terms of understanding, getting hold of tech teams, putting me across directly with the tech teams, getting the product done. So with that, after working there for almost about 3.5-4 years, I decided to start something on my own. And that was the time I decided to quit. And after Kardeko and before starting Wholesale Box, I actually started helping my wife in a garment retail business. From garment retail, she wanted into garment wholesale. And with garment wholesale is when we realized that there is a good 30-40% gap in the price at which the factory sells the product versus the price at which the shopkeeper buys the product. And this was primarily happening because of the middleman in between, right? So two to three wholesalers, each wholesaler trying to operate on a 10-15% margins was the primary reason for this chain. And also the fact that somebody sitting out of Bellary or somebody sitting in say Coorg can not easily travel to Jaipur or Surat to easily buy the products from manufacturers, or even the biggest of the wholesalers who are aggregating smaller and large manufacturers. So with this thought, we started Wholesale Box in 2015. I got my team together. Getting the first set of team was very interesting. You know, I got I was very well networked, got hold of people from different diverse backgrounds, got them together, we formed a team, we started Wholesale Box in 2015. It came with its own set of, you know, challenges. So Jaipur as a place, while is a very, very, you know, stable place in terms of people not trying to switch too much like Bangalore, but at the same time, you know, building up a team which understands startups and has the risk appetite is also slightly tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Once you build the team, the retention is easier. But building the team itself in the first place has some challenges. And I'm talking about 2015, right? So from 2015 to 2020, things have significantly changed. Now, there's a lot of interest in startups. A lot of people are willing to take the risk. This was not the case in 2015. So what happens is, you know, I was also transitioning from an employee to an employer. And even, you know, from 2010 to 2014 at Kardeko, I was an employee, but I was actually driving it like my own business, right? So I used to take care of the entire P&L, everything.
So you're an entrepreneur?
Yes. Okay. So give me a good sense of ownership, and that's what I tried to sort of replicate in Wholesale Box. But I realized that not many people, you know, would have the mindset of joining a startup or, you know, joining a company. People don't understand ESOP so early. And, you know, a startup cannot easily pay the full market salaries to people. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you know, I think good 5.5 years have passed since we started Wholesale Box. I still have to, you know, cope up with the fact that people still have a lot of employee-driven mindset instead of sort of employer-driven mindset or a startup mindset to work in a startup. But having said that, I think it has been a great journey in terms of how things evolved. You know, we started in 2015. We got VC term sheets in 2016. Orias came in as a lead investor. Orias is definitely a very well-known, well-respected fund. So building the company was very interesting. And post the funding, 2017 was crazy growth in terms of, you know, whatever we thought, we executed it well and we grew very fast. So net, you know, great times. 2017 is when I got called by the Rashtrapati Bhavan for an event, got awarded for innovation in garment in textile industry. So net, I think this was like going well, but every startup, you know, has a lot of ups and downs, right? It's never ups. It's more downs than ups. You plan out something, you'd want to execute it, you face, sometimes your team is not in sync. Sometimes you, you know, you're not able to push the things through your own team. The unity of command is not there. Sometimes you face other challenges, like, you know, you try doing something, but the initial results are discouraging. The clients don't accept it. Even Apple was not built in a day, right? So,
yeah. The room was not built in a day.
Yeah. So there are a lot of challenges that keep coming in startups, right from, you know, product market fit to executing the stuff, getting the things rolled out, then getting customer retention, then getting team retention, managing funding. So honestly, you know, what I've learned is entrepreneurship is not easy and it's not a short-term game. Anyone who is trying to get into entrepreneurship should look at least a 10-year time frame that he can put out of his life to actually do entrepreneurship.
Yeah,
not a marathon. It's not a sprint, but it's a marathon. And it's a marathon before jumping into that marathon, right, for 10 years, one should definitely look at his own personal finances, family obligations, other obligations, and look at their own personality types. If they have the risk appetite to do that for 10 years, if you and your family can survive doing that for 10 years without actually earning, because entrepreneurs are not, you know, in usual cases, at least for 95% of entrepreneurs, right? Even Paytm started in 90s, took almost 8-10 years to even come to the limelight. Right?
So right.
Great respect for entrepreneurs like Vijay Shekhar Sharma, who did not surrender and kept trying. Right? And those are the times when the entrepreneur is definitely tight on his own personal finances. So anyone who sort of looks at getting into entrepreneurship should for sure try to ensure that his personal means are taken care of before jumping onto entrepreneurship. Right? So it requires your family, your close network to be in loop and definitely some money in the bank.
True. Yeah, we are going to talk about the fundings also. How did it all started for Wholesale Box? And what was the initial product which came out where you were able to get the first customer, or you already had the customer base and it started with that?
Now, this is interesting, right? So September 2015 is when we started our office, and 27th of September 2015 itself, I traveled to Bangalore hiring our first sales guy feet on street. 27th or 28th, I don't remember the date, but I think the day I landed in Bangalore, I took the sales team for a training. There were three guys. I took them to a shop for a demo, and the shopkeeper ordered for 25,000 rupees straight.
Okay.
Right, so I'm super excited. I called up my
first customer
team in Jaipur that we've got our first customer. The order has been placed. Of course, they could see it on the back end, but then they told me that the customer is not the first. This is the second customer. They already got an order directly. So
that's nice.
Yeah. So I think this was our launch in a very short span of time, right? So a product like Wholesale Box, which is technically very, very complex. Hmm. We built it out in phases. The first phase, when we initially built it out, we did not have an app. We had only a mobile website and a web, okay. Desktop website. We felt a lot of people, those were the times pre-Jio era where data was costly. People were not comfortable even downloading a 4 or 5 MB app. And I still remember our sales team used to give hotspots to the clients to download our app.
Yeah, even we'll not download all the pictures that are shown. Now every pictures we click.
Now everything, every picture, every video is auto-download, right? So times have changed. But, having started in 2015, we would definitely want to thank Jio. We would want to thank our Prime Minister, Mr. Narendra Modi, for pushing through GST. We also used to face a lot of challenges around, shopkeepers, small businesses asking for, goods without bill. And that was something which we never did and we never wanted to do. So we used to lose those customers. In 2017, the moment GST got implemented, we sort of got that comfort that shopkeepers started realizing that, getting goods without GST is not going to be easy. Then some of the logistics players got fined. I mean, there were huge penalties put on Gati. For okay. Just not maintaining waybills for entire consignment present in a truck, right? And that okay. was an eye-opener for the entire logistics industry, that carrying goods without waybills, right? And I'm not saying Gati was trying to do a mischief, right? I mean, they might have been carrying 100 parcels or 200 parcels. Out of those 200 parcels, even if 10 parcels with bill did not have a waybill, a transit e-way bill, they were fined heavily. And that was an eye-opener. A lot of logistics players stopped moving goods without bills and all. That really helped, right? Because we were trying to operate everything as per law. But a lot of small players, a lot of unorganized offline players were trying to operate in any possible way.
Yeah, so your product kind of enabling, I see it as it's enabling unbranded and the local brand market, a local brand market to have the increased customer reach.
Yes. Yes, and the shopkeepers started accepting it. They were like, fine that at least from this company, we're getting a large variety. Then we sort of got into complex algos on how to give fast-moving designs to shopkeepers and, how to ensure that we give them very fast-moving inventories, latest inventories that customers around them would love to buy. And that really helped, right? So the shopkeepers started loving us. We started getting a lot of repeats. And net-net, we realized that what we're trying to accomplish, we were on that journey. Of course, this journey came with a lot of challenges, right? So funding, sitting out of Jaipur, which is a tier 2 location, not a metro hub, not a VC hub. We did face some challenges. And... But then, too, we eventually had four funds backing us up. Then things started scaling up. We were on the verge of becoming profitable at a sizable scale. And then this COVID hit. So as I said, entrepreneurship keeps posing a lot of challenges. We faced a lot of challenges for a good 2 months, had zero revenues, a large team of about 200 plus people. So again, reworked the model during this time. We started doing services. We did a lot of stuff to ensure that we could pay our teams well. And then there was another initiative that we had started by January 2020, which we did not think if we would push so hard on that initiative. But with COVID happening, with lockdown happening, we actually started putting a lot of emphasis because that was a decent margin vertical.
Okay.
We started getting into brand liquidation space. So old season stocks in footwear. So the likes of Nike, Adidas, to Benetton, US Polo.
Okay. So you're into this different customer segment now with brands.
Yes. So with brands, again, you know, the segment is not different. We were largely sticking to tier 3, tier 4 shopkeepers. Those were the shopkeepers for whom we were actually solving the pain point of procurement.
How do you categorize this merchandise area of tier 2, tier 3 and T3, T4 segments of customers?
So it's pretty straightforward, right? You remove the top six metros and state capitals, right?
Mm-hmm. How has been the penetration?
80-85% of our business was actually coming from non-metros. Non-metros, non-tier ones.
Okay.
So pretty much, you know, very, very spread out. We would have serviced almost 7,000 pin codes out of the 13,000 in India.
Okay. That's a big number.
So it's a very, very well spread business that we did because, you know, every location, every locality, you would have some shopkeepers who are more tech savvy. They would discover wholesale works eventually in order.
Right. How has the acceptance and the adoption been? Because now the dynamics have changed a lot, even in retail industries, customer experience being remote. Do you see the customer surge and catching along with the demand?
No. So our industry is still facing challenges, right? So our buyer set is a typical offline store.
Mm-hmm.
And the offline stores, given the fact that walk-ins have reduced, a lot of shopkeepers themselves are struggling, the demand has reduced post-COVID, post-lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
But what we realized was that, you know, demand has reduced for fresh new designs because people are not really stepping out. But the discounted merchandise business, so that's a business, you know, a different vertical that I talked about a few minutes back. We ended up... doing 50 franchisee stores in during this lockdown itself. And so from June to December, we now have 50 stores selling discounted footwear to customers at 50, 60, 70% off. So of these 50 stores, we would have covered about 45 cities.
Oh, okay. 45
towns, I would say. Right? It's again tier 3 show. See, we strongly believe that India's tier 3, tier 4 is the next place which will, from where the spending will come. People are more fashion conscious now. People want to keep competing with the folks in metros in terms of fashion, right? So with internet advancing to tier 3, tier 4, the sense of fashion has changed. People want to wear latest fashion or people want to wear brands. And while we understand tier 3, tier 4 has good buying power, say for a larger mass, but the price points, you know, if changed from if an Adidas shoe of 10,000 rupees can be sold at 5,000 rupees to these guys, they're super happy in picking it up. And so we realize that discounted brands has a huge fan following in tier 3, tier 4. It's an unmet demand, right? One, they don't have Adidas dedicated outlet. They can't have because the population is not enough where the brand showroom can become viable. Some of the bigger districts will still have, some brand showrooms, but the smaller towns will not have. So having multi-brand outlets definitely is there. Some brands have penetrated well. But discount outlets as such in India is a concept which is very, very, geo-specific. You would have seen many discount outlets in Bangalore because they pick up old season stocks from different brands. They might sell 2-3 year old merchandise at 40-50% 60% off, but that's a phenomenon limited to Bangalore and maybe a few nearby places. sourcing of discounted merchandise is not easy for a shopkeeper. So the moment you remove Bangalore out of this entire business, a shopkeeper sitting out of Bikaner or Jodhpur, Udaipur in Rajasthan, or a shopkeeper sitting out of Jalandhar or Agra or Bareilly in UP will not find it easy to source discounted merchandise, and maintaining assortments, a lot of other stuff is not easy. These are bulk buyings, right? So what we do is we bulk buy the stocks, we segregate it well in a sellable format, in a merchandise SKU mix that a showroom needs to maintain to ensure that they fulfill customer demands, right? So that's how we break this bulk, supply to multiple stores. For the 50 stores that we have, and we are almost signing up 10 stores every month. And with this pace, it has become easy for us to source in volumes, provide good fast-moving old season stocks at discount to the customers.
Okay. So you're targeting the B2B segment. So coming from being an IIT background, and trying to insert the technology into supply chain management, how did you manage your transition from employee to entrepreneur? Because you were telling that from Car Deco to your own venture. Can you talk a little bit on the challenges you faced to position yourself as an entrepreneur?
See, I was fortunate enough that my prior experience was also more entrepreneurial than actually an employee. But having said that, you do face challenges when you don't get enough support ecosystem. Say, not Car Deco, but before Car Deco, I worked with a US-based consulting company, right? So over there, even if it's a presentation preparation, you do the basic slides, and then you have a team who will touch up your slides. You have so much of support staff that you want tea, coffee, whatever comes to your desk. You want to order stuff, you just tell your admin help to manage everything. Everything is sort of taken care of. You can focus on your work. You want to go somewhere, you have office cabs, everything is there, right? The moment you join a small company, so when I joined Car Deco, it was very, very small, right? 4-5 people. So when you join a very small company or you work with a startup, that is where you face there's a significant change, because then you have to sort of do a lot of stuff yourself. And that was the same thing I had to do at Wholesale Box, right? So right from doing our own hotel bookings to managing our own stuff to, ordering food for the team, so many other things, right? Maintaining admin stuff, ensuring the team gets tea, coffee in time. The bills do not run into large numbers. So cost control as well as ensuring that, basic needs are met. Was a big the challenge, and which I face ki a lot of entrepreneurs find it very, very difficult. What I've realized is, that entrepreneurs should try hiring, right set of people, right mindset of people who can take off, who he can offload a lot of work to. And a lot of mundane work should be immediately handed over so that the entrepreneur can focus largely on the growth. Building a good team with a very strong entrepreneurial mindset is needed, right? There is no way that anyone can succeed without building a good team.
Right. And what were your initial day challenges? Of course, you might have had many nightmare days to establish.
See, what happens is hiring talent in a startup that too in Jaipur is not easy, right? And before we had raised the money, paying out good market salaries was also very difficult. So hiring people with entrepreneurial mindset was a challenge, right? Probably every 50 interviews that you do, you may come across with just 2-3 people with entrepreneurial mindset. And people who have an entrepreneurial mindset might also be evaluating something on their own.
Yeah.
Right. So you would want to hire those people, and those people might also be thinking that they would want to start up themselves. And typically in a startup, one should try to avoid people with very employee mindset, salary mindset. It poses a good challenge, right? At least tier 3, tier 4 or a tier 2. So I would count Jaipur as a tier 1/2. The moment you talk of, a tier 1, it's not the same as Bangalore, right? Bangalore people are far more exposed to how money is made out of ESOPs, what are the growth avenues, and so much, so and so forth. Not easy to build the same team in a short span of time in Jaipur. I mean, I got a lot of unfair advantage in terms of being from an IIT and IIM, that I could network with people, could convince people given my own background.
Strong community you had.
Strong community. The other thing was credibility with these two brand names was also there and helped sort of initial hiring. And after the initial hiring was done, you know, once you have 25, 30 people sitting out of your office, then hiring people subsequently is easier, because then when, you know, anyone is coming for an interview, would see action happening, and then hiring becomes easier.
Yeah. Any challenges in the product, getting things and releasing the product out, apart from the team hiring?
No, so I actually was able to build a very good tech team out of Jaipur. So, you know, contrary to what a lot of people would believe, Jaipur has a decent tech talent.
Yeah, okay.
So, ended up building the team fairly easy. The team, once the team was built, building the product was very easy after building the right team.
Oh, that's nice. So, what is the very first success that you felt? This is my first moment of relief in Wholesale Box.
So, I think first aha moment was getting the first customer on the first day itself when we tried to commercially launch it. We had 5-6 orders on the first day. So that was good enough. Then a couple of months later, we were actually growing very well in the first year. The moment we started getting VC interest, we felt more confident. And the moment Orias confirmed their investment, the first investment, with us, that was an aha moment, right? So, Rehan is a very well-known name in the startup ecosystem. So, Rehan Yar Khan investing in your company was definitely a very big positive. We also had interest from Contrarian, a couple of other senior angels.
Okay. So, how was your experience been with the VCs? Did you get any tough or unexpected questions completely out of nowhere related to what you were doing?
Yeah, it happened very often. Right? So, I have, you know... like every industry, you know, VC industry also have some very smart people and some people who try to force fit X onto Y. So I think it was a mix, right? So some VCs came across as very intelligent VCs asking the right set of questions, and the reverse also happened, right? So, I mean, did come across with very, very surprising questions, very, very surprising comparisons. But I think it's a part of the game. An entrepreneur will have to live with it. You know, you might be asked a lot of questions which are not even relevant. So you need to be clear at your end on how, you know, what you are doing, what you have to, what your business model is, and what you end up doing.
Any specific instances that you would like to share?
Yeah. So this was our first... first 2-3 meetings with a very small stage, early stage seed fund. I was in Mumbai for this meeting. I met this guy who actually has been with that fund for about 5-6 years. Was not the founder of the fund, but the moment we started discussing about business, I told him that, you know, we make a net of 5.5% on a B2B transaction. He said 5.5 is too less, right? Mintra makes 35%. And I was like shocked, because he was trying to compare a B2B rate, a bulk order of 5.5, with a 5.5% net margin, with a 35% gross margin of B2C, where even the courier cost, logistics cost, everything was included. I told him categorically that our 5.5 is net after every cost. So, you know, comparing someone's net cost with, you know, the gross margin. I mean, it was like completely ignoring the operational cost, logistics cost, a lot of other costs. And I told him, you know, that, you know, when Mintra makes 35%, out of that 35, straight away there is a, you know, 20%, 25% logistics cost, because they're selling off 300, 400, 500 rupee piece, which will have at least 100 rupee shipping cost. But the gentleman was not, getting it. So I respected, his thought. He had ordered a Diet Coke for me. I peacefully had the Diet Coke and I smiled and I left.
Like completely coming from different background.
Yeah. And I still remember, you know, when I, in one of the VC pitches, I told that, you know, 90% of India is unbranded. 90% Indians wear unbranded stuff. Now, this VC, of course, he started... at best of the colleges, worked with best of the companies, consulting companies, worked abroad for a lot of years. He said, what is unbranded? I have not seen anything unbranded, right? Everything that my wife shops or, you know, everything that I wear or my family wears is all coming from malls. Where are these unbranded shops? Okay. So, right, you do come across such interesting things that, you know, for a VC, his life, his universe was Bangalore. And his universe was what his family, friends, peers were doing. Right? Now, of course, you know, that's he belongs to top 0.01% of India. And that's not how market operates.
Yeah. If not VC, like, did you have any plan B? Are you a man of plan B? Like, if this wouldn't have worked out, what could have been the other options?
No. So actually, we just discussed two edge cases. There are a lot of sensible VCs. Actually, there are more sensible VCs than the examples that we talked about, right? So I actually ended up meeting a lot of good VCs. They had good set of questions to be asked. There are some funds where VCs come from their own entrepreneurial background, right? So successful entrepreneurs converted to VCs, or maybe, you know, failed entrepreneurs converted to VCs. That's where, you know, the experience that they have is significantly better and more enriching than anything else, right? So, I mean, we did not have any other plan other than a VC, right? VC was the only plan. But having said that, it doesn't mean that, you know, you end up meeting one or two VCs who don't understand or who don't get it. Doesn't mean that the VC industry will not get it. And there are, I mean, there are more, much more number of smarter VCs who will get it then the number of VCs will not get it. See, the business makes overall sense. There will be takers. So, I mean, my advice to all entrepreneurs is that whatever business they want to do or they look at, they should definitely look at, you know, more overall scheme of things. In the overall scheme of things, the business should make sense.
When you go for a VC and get angel funding and the Series A funding, it also comes along with what is expected as an outcome out of it, isn't it? With that, what are your future plans?
So I think I have understood how the funding scenario and VC ecosystem works. And I understand broadly that, you know, every VC would look at low capex, capital efficient models. So whatever you're now doing, even this franchise business, discount stock lots, everything is all operating on very low, you know, capital involvement. It's more of rotation. So we every time we try to do something new, we try to ensure that it is capital efficient, doesn't block capital. We were always negative working capital, right? So we get our money first, and then it is you know, used in getting the goods required.
Okay.
So I've been always focusing on making the entire business very asset light. So asset light and capital efficient, these are very important to be able to, you know, get any VC onboarded. And this is what we have to do.
Okay. How did you manage during this COVID days? Because the dynamics have changed so drastically in all the industries, and lockdown hampering shipments of goods especially, right? And you need to deal with this all supply chain management and stuff. So how were you able to manage the demand and the need fulfillment?
So now this is interesting. During the COVID time, we were actually in a pretty bad state. Right? So the state we were in was, I mean, very, very distressed state, tight state. What we actually did was, now this is where the entrepreneur inside me said that if we don't fight it out, we'll not be able to survive. So we decided to do tech services using our tech team, using our call center. We did a lot of, you know, for we were doing calling for a gaming company using our credit and accounts team. We did projects. So almost everyone in the company who was a cost head, we converted them to a revenue head.
Okay.
So all the cost centers were converted to a revenue generating, you know, teams. I picked up all the projects. We did those projects. We could survive for the 2-3 months. And then that gave me enough time to sort of rework our business in terms of ensuring that we push more on high margin products. We push we don't push on low margin products or loss making products. Those products are still there, but you know, the clients are buying, they're buying on their own. We don't, we stopped doing discounting, promotions, or we just wanted to ensure that, you know, we would survive and we would be there for people who for whom we really mean something, right? So our client base who really wanted to buy from us still buys from us.
So what are the drastic changes that has brought in you as an individual and also to your business, way that you work and stuff?
So one biggest change that has come in me as a person is that, you know, this entire thing that happened, you know, when COVID happened, we had to sort of take some drastic measures. Some of the senior folks, core team resigned and they wanted to move on to more stable companies, picked up jobs and all. I was under a tremendous distress for almost 2-3 months, right? I could not sleep. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, the survival also looked tough.
Mm-hmm.
As an individual, I took the bold call that I'll not make it, I'll not let it die. I'll make it work. And that's where I sort of stopped worrying about things, stopped, you know, it made me a lot fearless, right? We are facing issues at all ends, right? Our suppliers were panicking because, you know, we had payments to be released. Our buyers were panicking because of the goods that they had recently bought. They didn't have the money to pay for it. Our employees were panicking because they felt their job security is an issue. Core team, you know, some people in our core team left. They wanted to pick up jobs because they felt that they want to move to more stable things. Net-net, I think that was the worst phase of my life and made me a lot more stronger. I sort of came to a conclusion that I'll have to be less emotional about anything else but business, right? So what matters the most for an entrepreneur is how to make his company work.
Yeah.
Things may be in your favor, things may not be in your favor, but never give up. Just, you know, keep striving. Don't have emotional attachment with 10 things in life. Just remember that, you know, in your distress time, In the worst time, only your family is there with you, right? A lot of good support pillars might also not be there. So just remember that, you know, family has to be supported. Family, you also support the family, that family also supports you. So one, you know, even before starting up, always ensure that your family is in sync. And then don't build too much of emotions within the company. Because that sort of, in good times, it is all okay. But in any startup will definitely go through a lot of bad times, right? So bad times, the emotions play out, people leave, and that causes a lot of distress. So always have redundancy built into the business. Don't be dependent on very few people, right, is what I've learned. Right. Net, you know, this phase has made me a lot more confident. That, you know, that my mind works, creativity works, picking up services business to survive, to make the company survive during the time when we could not generate any other cash flow. That really helped me, you know, boosted my confidence that, I mean, I could do things to ensure that, you know, whatever is the situation, we can come out of it.
True. What happened after that? Right now, how is the business doing?
So now the, you know, business has picked up, business is picking up. We are now profitable. The new vertical of this branded stock lot franchise. We now have 50 outlets. That's a sizable number. And so business net is back to, you know, in fact, a trajectory which is better than pre-COVID.
Okay.
In terms of our conviction on the business, in terms of how we have reworked it, in terms of profitability, in terms of a lot of other parameters, in terms of dependency that we are building in our customers. A lot of stuff is far, far, far better than before COVID. I think COVID has given all of us enough time to, you know, stop doing the routine works, step back, think what is right for the business and then execute it. What happens when you're riding a tiger, right? You can't stop, you can't get off. If you get off a running tiger, the tiger will bite you. But during COVID, got a lot of time to rethink, you know, if the direction was not correct, how to correct it.
Yeah, it's your own company and you need to take care end to end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as an entrepreneur to run his own business, his or her own business, should they start thinking about the sales and marketing also from the day one, or they focus on the problem solving area and give the sales and marketing to a different team? So what's your opinion on that?
Now, this is where, you know, I have a very, very, one-sided opinion. Any founding team does not have is not having a sales mindset. Is a questionable team, because, you know, whatever good you may build, if you are not able to sell it, if you don't get a customer, it's a waste. Right. And I've also come across people, I've come across a few people from tech backgrounds where they built excellent systems, ERPs, they invested, you know, a couple of crores, they invested 3-4 years of their life. And when they took the product to the market, nobody was willing to buy it. So what I've understood is that for any startup to survive, sales and marketing has to be there in the core team from day one. That's an expertise you have to have. And if your product is not selling, basically you take immediate feedback from the market on what the market needs, right? And what also happens is I've come across a lot of early stage entrepreneurs who tell me that, you know, that they spoke to 5 clients and they would, those clients said that they would want this product, and hence we built it. And when we went to the same set of clients, they refused to pay, or they were cooking up excuses that, you know, probably I'll pay after a few days, this and that. So what I've realized is that unless you're smart enough to figure out that your product will actually be, you know, clients would be willing to pay, and your product is actually a value.
Okay.
Till that point of time, it does not make sense to invest a lot of time building the product. Sales, customer feedback, market survey, market reality check is what is very, very much needed.
Right. Yeah. Now you are handling both the side, right? You are into the online e-commerce and also handling the B2B segment of offline businesses as well. So what are the potential that you see that people should think about the offline business as well? And what are they?
So just to correct, we are not into the online B2C space. Largely a B2B player supplying to offline shops. And even a brand liquidation business is brand franchisee stores, which is again offline. So the whole FashCard initiative is offline. We have 50 stores. We don't sell any B2C product online. We're not selling single pieces.
Right, B2B.
All is B2B. I think offline still has a lot of potential in even in developed markets like US. About 85% of business still offline. Right? Had it not been offline, Walmart would not have been one of the largest people around to buy Flipkart out. It's offline is what people still feel far more convenient to buy. It's something where touch and feel is more important. So fashion definitely we consider as an industry. Where touch and feel, a trial is needed before buying the product. And not everything can happen purely online. There might be a few there is a smaller segment that would be more comfortable buying online.
So what's your opinion on young people who are young entrepreneurs who wanted to actually get a grip on the offline business? Now, being this digital market is actually dynamically changing, how good is for a new beginner to start looking for the business options available in the offline side, and what are those businesses that they potentially can?
See, there are a lot of offline businesses that will continue to do well and will not have challenges with online getting traction. So having said that, when we talk of fashion, unbranded fashion may still remain to be largely offline, because non-standardized products being sold requires a touch and feel, requires people to try at a shopkeeper, at a shop, you know, in a trial room, and then buy. Same way, there could be a lot of products where online sales is not going to be easy. The customers can't, they don't find it easy to buy purely online. when it comes to large value transactions, again, you know, that's something where offline scores far significantly better than the online. People are not willing to see. I've not seen, except for mobile phones and televisions and some standardized items, people hesitate in buying a 5,000 rupee kurti online or a 50,000 rupee product online. So jewelry, for example, jewelry is largely an offline phenomenon, right? Online, it might still sell for a price point of artificial jewelry of 200-300-500 bucks or 1,000 bucks. But the moment it comes to buying a 20,000 rupee item, people are far more comfortable buying it offline.
Yeah.
The offline has tremendous opportunity. The other thing is offline is less riskier than a pure online model.
Okay.
And otherwise, depending on the product market fit, the geography they are in, the city they are in, and the kind of expertise they themselves have, should clearly define whether they'll be more successful in an online business or an offline business.
Okay. And for the people going through failures, right, what's your message from your experience to uplift them?
So people who are going through failures are actually the people who have tried it out, right? So I think failure is very important. That is the best learning one ever gets. And nobody gets success all the time. If you try 10 things, you'll be successful in 2 attempts out of 10, right? So 8 times you'll have a failure. Learn from your failures, move ahead, don't give up. Right, failures are a part of life. Failures are part of an entrepreneur's journey. And any entrepreneur expecting no failures and only success will actually.
Yeah, what's your mantra to stay calm during the chaos day?
See, entrepreneurship is a marathon, right? As I earlier said, what I think is any entrepreneur should have his close friend, families, mentors to help him out through this difficult journey. Right. So not every day will be rewarding. You'll have a lot of setbacks. Every time you have a setback, you talk to a senior entrepreneur, you talk to your mentor who might have gone through these challenges. That builds a lot of motivation, right? So sometimes what happens is you want to break a mountain, right? It can't be done in one day. You attempt it for, 10 times, it might not break. But if you attempt it 100 times, it might break. Right.
So right, right.
Persistence is the most important thing for an entrepreneur. So if you have small successes, celebrate them, move ahead, be happy. If you have failures, don't give up, right? You'll have failures, you'll have demotivations, you'll feel bad, things are not working out. Just remember, you need to have some mentors in this industry. Talk to them, they will help you out, they will try to help you keep calm. And these are people who would have become successful after some time, right? So these are people who actually, when you talk to people, I did talk to some senior entrepreneurs, right? And I realized that, whatever bad times we have seen, their bad times are even worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And they kept fighting and they came out of it.
Yeah. I guess you interview a lot of budding entrepreneurs, even in your founding team, like you form buddies, knowing each other and make sure that the minds are sinking. So what is the one important quality that you look from any budding entrepreneur?
See, I think one is commitment levels. Extreme hard work is needed for any entrepreneur to be successful. So if I come across entrepreneurs who cannot put in, 17, 18 hours a day of consistent effort, my suggestion would be not to get into entrepreneurship. So a budding entrepreneur who does not have the risk appetite, who does not have the, guts to do it, or who does not have the ability to consistently put in 17, 18 hours or 16 hours a day should not look at entrepreneurship. They are better off doing jobs.
Yeah, should be able to take up failures, right?
You need to be a lot more emotionally stronger. You should also have a support ecosystem. Any entrepreneur not coming from financially stable backgrounds, my suggestion is that, if things don't work out, you'll get jittery very fast. Right. So it's a mix. Entrepreneurship, risk taking is a mix of your own individual challenges, individual stability, financial stability of the family support, then your ecosystem, then your upbringing, then your friends support, then your peers, and then the market environment. And then all these factors have to be combined with your own personality type. If you're a person who can build a team, who can motivate the team, who can drive the team, probably this is for you. If you're a person who do not enjoy being with people, if you're a person who is more reserved, if you're a very self-centered person, entrepreneurship is not for you. If you're somebody who thinks that, you know, I am a smart worker, I can work only, I should rather, you know, what people do in 10 hours, I can do in 5 hours, and hence I should work only for 5 hours a day because I'm able to deliver more, then you're not an entrepreneur, you're an employee.
Yeah, that makes the difference.
Because if you're doing able to do something that others do in 10 hours, you do it 5 hours, then you should do work for another 10-11 hours to be able to do what others will do in 20-30 hours and try to make your company much more productive.
Fair enough. Talking on the same failure line, what are the things that you see that potentially can go wrong in entrepreneurial path with a perfect product, with a perfect solution for a customer, in terms of customer fitment or in terms of market fitment?
See, a lot of things can go wrong. Sometimes what happens is a good product going to the right client also may not work out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there could be a lot of gaps. Unless you as a founder or your team has that mindset of getting into depth of things and figuring out the mismatch or why the things are not working. If you can't ask the question why to yourself or to your team, then basically the whole thing may fail.
Okay. What is your vision for India in 5 years in retail industry and B2B segment of supply chain?
So my vision for India is that, our supply chain should get more organized, far more organized. We should be able to digitalize a lot of part of it. We understand what is flowing where. The demand gets far more organized and captured well so that the supply can be made far more efficient, right? And we cut down the wastages. We work out the right set of things to ensure that we are far, far, far more productive and efficient than what we were without technology. And I think technology, the biggest strain that technology puts is to organize a lot of data. Next 5 years, if we are able to organize a lot of this data well, we are able to aggregate the demand, we are able to fulfill the demand in a very organized manner. I think that's where I look at.
How do you see our current generation startups would adopt and play a big role in the larger ecosystem?
See, current generation entrepreneurs and startups will play a very, very significant role in the overall Indian ecosystem. So my whole point is, people who have passed out of good colleges like IITs or IIMs or NITs, we should understand that we are a privileged lot. We have a career of almost about 40 years, right? In a span of 40 years, everyone who thinks that they can do something or they want to do something for the society, they want to give back to the society, should definitely consider an entrepreneurial spirit. If you want to give back to your country, if you were to give back to your community, you should be an entrepreneur, generate jobs instead of becoming a job seeker yourself, right? So all of us, all youngsters, can actually play a very, very significant role in changing the way how India is, right? In changing the entire landscape of the country. But not going to be easy. But I think entrepreneurship is something which, as a society, also we should promote. We should learn to, even value failures. We should learn to encourage our kids, our family, our friends, everyone around to be an entrepreneur. Because if, even 5% of top talent passing out from, passing out as CAs, doctors, or, engineers, MBAs, start putting up entrepreneurial ventures, I think the country will grow leaps and bounds in terms of GDP. So it's entrepreneurship that is going to revive the country. I think our PM has a similar view that, entrepreneurship and creating jobs is far more important than actually looking for your own job.
Yeah, thank you. Coming to the rapid fire round, the final round of this interview. So I've listed down some questions. One global leader you follow?
Ray Dalio.
Okay. Name of the book you are currently reading?
This is a book by Let's Build a Startup by CoCubes founders.
Okay. And one crazy childhood activity you still wanted to do?
I think, eating creative Maggi.
Nice. Given a superpower for one day, what power do you ask for?
Oh, I want to be a Superman for a day. Okay. Flying out here and there.
Which wish tops your bucket list?
Maybe a couple of Lamborghinis, Bugattis and fancy cars.
Costly wish. What is one skill that you're learning today to upskill yourself?
So, I am learning a lot of... It's something to do with your making myself very calm and composed in terms of decision making. I have understood that, it's not necessary that you keep deciding everything on that moment itself. It can be also decided a day later if it can be decided better.
Okay, that's a good advice. Your one-liner advice for school or college students who dream to be an entrepreneur?
Start a business. When you're in school, when you're in college, start a business. For renting out comic books, renting out bicycles is a good idea.
Okay, that's good advice.
See, entrepreneurs are not built in a day. It's a psychology. And that comes with, your understanding of business. If you start doing something in your childhood to generate money, then you start respecting you. Your urge to earn more money and to grow faster becomes more intense in your early childhood, right? So,
nice. One thing about you that you want people to remember you for?
So, extreme hard work capability.
Okay, nice. And your favorite subject in school?
Was maths.
Okay. What's your favorite social media platform?
I am only on Facebook and LinkedIn, so I think both of them are equally good.
So that's the end of the episode. Thank you very much, Rohit, for coming on to the show and sharing all your insights.
Thank you, Ashok.
Thank you. Okay, that's the end of episode number 3. Thank you very much, Rohit, for coming on and sharing the insights. And to our listeners, you can find out the episode summary in the description. Until we catch up soon, stay tuned, be motivated. Thank you.